You know, when you see a really good counterfeit object, let's say a fake designer watch or maybe a forged painting.
Oh, right. Like one of those high-end replicas.
Yeah, exactly. At first glance, I mean, everything looks perfect. The colors are right, the weight is there, the little mechanisms seem to tick.
Right, it passes the initial eye test.
It totally does.
Yeah.
But then you hold it, you look really closely, and I don't know, something in your brain just flags it.
Like an instinct.
Yeah, it's wearing the costume of the real thing, but the soul is missing. And today on the Deep Dive, we're looking at a developer who realized their AI was doing exactly this with language.
Which is such a common problem right now.
It is. And we're going to get into the insane, like, 435-line pipeline they had to build just to teach a machine how to have a cultural soul.
The challenge they ran into here is honestly one of the most stubborn frontiers in artificial intelligence today.
Because the grammar part is basically solved, right?
Exactly. Getting an AI to speak a language, to nail the vocabulary and the syntax, that's a solved problem. We have massive models that do that in milliseconds.
Right.
But getting it to sound like it actually belongs in the culture it's speaking to, that requires, well, reverse engineering human intuition.
Which is incredibly hard to quantify. I
Yeah.
mean, for you listening right now, whether you use AI to draft emails or analyze data or even just generate content for work, this
Yeah.
is going to fundamentally change how you interact with these tools.
It really shifts your perspective on what these models are actually doing.
Definitely. So our source today is this wildly detailed week-long log from a developer. They basically had to rebuild their AI's entire writing system from scratch.
And the catalyst for all of this was so simple.
Yeah, it was just a single, devastatingly polite complaint from a reader.
Okay, let's unpack this. What actually happened with this complaint?
So the reader reached out regarding the Chinese versions of the developer's tech blog posts.
And they pointed out that while the articles were perfectly readable, the actual reading experience itself was just terrible.
Ouch.
Yeah, the phrase they used essentially implied the language was completely stiff and lifeless.
So the developer actually went back and they audited their own Chinese articles and they discovered the reader was spot on.
Every single sentence was grammatically flawless.
Grammatically flawless. So the technical info was 100% accurate, but reading it felt like slogging through like a translated English blog post that was merely wearing Chinese characters as a disguise.
That is such a vivid way to put it.
And it brings us to the actual diagnosis the developer arrived at. There's a very specific term for this linguistic disease. It's called translation ease, or in Chinese, fan yi kang.
Right. And what's fascinating here is that translation ease is a structural failure disguised as a stylistic one.
Wait, structural? How so?
Well, the symptoms are highly specific. When the developer actually looked under the hood, they noticed the AI was constantly generating these incredibly long, heavily nested subordinate clauses.
Oh, which is a total hallmark of English sentence architecture. We love stacking clauses on top of each other.
We really do. We build sentences like Russian nesting dolls.
Yes.
But Chinese sentence structure naturally favors shorter paratactic sequences.
Paratactic meaning like clauses placed side by side.
Exactly, side by side without all those heavy conjunctions dragging them down. And the AI was also chronically overusing the passive voice.
Like what kind of phrasing?
It would write these clunky phrases like, under the condition of not needing, where a native Chinese speaker would just effortlessly use an active verb.
Ugh, that sounds exhausting to read.
It is. Furthermore, it was drowning the text in these rigid academic connectors.
It's basically like trying to play a jazz solo by rigidly reading sheet music.
Yes, exactly.
You're hitting all the technically correct notes on the page, but because you aren't feeling the swing, the audience immediately knows you aren't a real jazz musician.
That is the perfect way to visualize it. The AI is playing the right notes, but it is completely failing the genre. If you ran this text through a standard grammar checker, the AI gets an A+. The machine truly believes it is succeeding.
But the cultural register is entirely wrong.
Completely.
Yeah.
Because the AI is pulling from a training data pool that is heavily saturated with formal texts. I mean, legal documents, news reports, Wikipedia pages.
Millions of pages of translated Western textbook.
Exactly. It assumes that to be authoritative, it has to be academic.
The developer actually provided a brilliant side-by-side example of this. So the AI originally generated a sentence explaining a piece of software.
I remember this one.
Yeah, it wrote something like, let me get this right. The core characteristic of this system lies in its ability to independently execute complex tasks without continuous human intervention.
It reads like a stereo instruction manual.
It really does. technically accurate, but totally devoid of life.
Right.
But then the developer showed how that exact same concept would be written natively for their target audience. And it translates closer to this. What's the difference between this agent and a normal AI? Let me give you an analogy.
A completely different approach.
Right. It says, an AI assistant is like an obedient employee. It does what you say. But the agent,
yeah,
it's more like a reliable partner. You say, fix this project. It breaks down the tasks, does the work, and writes you a summary.
Notice the shift there. It moves from this abstract declaration to a concrete, relatable analogy.
Yeah, you can actually visualize it. And quickly, just for context for the listener, when they say agent in that example, they're referring to a specific type of AI.
Right, one that doesn't just chat with you, but can actually like use tools, browse the web, or execute multi-step tasks on its own.
Exactly, like an autonomous worker versus just a chatbot.
The native version explains that concept so naturally.
It sounds like a friend explaining something to you over coffee, rather than a professor lecturing from a podium.
And this realization is what forced the developer to look way past vocabulary and really examine how different cultures actually construct arguments.
Because the structural gap between English web writing and Chinese content creation is just vast.
It really is. If we look at how an English nonfiction piece is typically built, say, a standard tech blog or a business memo, it uses a highly deductive pattern.
Meaning it's relentlessly linear.
Exactly. Thesis first. State your claim, provide 3 points of supporting evidence, and then reiterate the claim in your conclusion.
It's literally the standard 5-paragraph essay structure drilled into the head of every American student from middle school onward.
Right. And the ultimate goal of that deductive structure is to persuade the reader through sheer logic.
The tone is very authoritative.
Very. You are the expert transmitting data to a student. But Chinese web content, specifically what is known as Zimeitai,
which translates to self-media or like independent content creators.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Zimeitai operates on a completely different frequency.
They use this inductive spiral pattern. They almost never start with a thesis statement.
Rarely. Instead, the opening is usually a concrete scene, a personal story, or maybe a highly provocative question.
It drops the reader into a specific moment.
Right. It explores an emotional reaction to that moment and then spirals outward into a broader insight. It's an architecture of scene, then feeling, then insight.
I love that. Let's actually walk through what that inductive spiral feels like for the reader, because the developer studied some heavy hitters in the Chinese tech writing space to figure this out.
Oh, the examples they used were great.
Yeah, they looked at writers like Banfo Xianren, who is famous for taking incredibly dense, serious financial analysis and wrapping it in this irreverent, almost chaotic humor.
Banfo Xianren is a perfect example. A deductive English writer might start a piece by saying, today we will analyze the macroeconomic factors leading to the collapse of the shared bicycle industry.
Very dry, very thesis first.
Exactly. But Banfo Xianren, he might start by talking about eating a terrible skewer of street food at 3 a.m. while watching a pile of yellow bicycles rust in an alleyway.
Wow, what an image.
And then he slowly spirals that personal, visceral observation into a masterclass on venture capital mismanagement.
They also studied Zhu Bian, who writes with this very oral, logical storytelling style, and Liu Qiwen, who always anchors his analysis in historical narratives before spiraling to the present day.
The goal of this spiral structure isn't to bludgeon the reader with logic. The goal is Gongming resonance.
Resonance, that's such a powerful word for it.
It is the key metric of success in this cultural register. Even the endings reflect this. I mean, an English blog post ends with an executive summary.
Sure.
A Chinese self-media post ends with a punchline, a rhetorical question, or a strong, emotionally charged attitude statement.
Something designed to make the reader feel something so deeply that they immediately share the post.
Exactly.
But let me push back on this for a second, though.
Sure.
If I'm reading a tech blog or a business analysis, I usually just want the answer. I want the data. Isn't stating your thesis up front just objectively the most efficient way to communicate?
From a purely informational standpoint, yes.
Right. So why is the scene and feeling spiral necessary for this audience? Doesn't efficiency win out?
It's a fair question, but it fundamentally misunderstands the purpose of the medium.
How so?
Efficiency is paramount for a user manual or a legal brief, but a blog post, a newsletter, or an opinion piece, those are trying to build engagement and trust. In Chinese content culture, that inductive spiral, that emotional resonance, is the actual mechanism of trust.
It signals to the reader, I understand the world the same way you do.
Exactly. If you slap an aggressive, deductive English rhetorical structure onto Chinese content, it creates psychological friction.
The reader might understand the words, but the delivery mechanism violates their cultural expectations.
So they reject the entire package.
It's the uncanny valley again. You're technically readable, but deeply uncomfortable.
Precisely.
So knowing this massive structural difference, the next logical step for the developer is the lazy route, right?
Yes, of course.
If I'm in their shoes, I'm just going to open my AI tool, paste the draft, and type a prompt like, rewrite this using an inductive spiral. Be conversational. Write like you're talking to a friend.
Yeah.
Did they try that?
They did. It's what we call the naive fix.
Naive fix, right?
They loaded up the system prompt with abstract rules. You know, use short paragraphs, avoid academic tone, be engaging.
And let me guess, it completely failed.
Spectacularly. The AI acknowledged the instructions and then proceeded to spit out the exact same stiff academic translation ease it had before.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Why does that happen?
It's a mathematical problem, ultimately.
Because if these large language models have read essentially the entire internet, if they know the dictionary definition of conversational, why can't they just, you know, execute the vibe?
To understand why vibes fail, we have to look at the underlying mechanics of how large language models actually generate text.
Okay, take us under the hood.
An LLM is not a human actor reading a script. It is a highly sophisticated mathematical engine predicting the next most likely token or word fragment.
Right. It's just guessing the next word based on probability.
Exactly. So when you give it a topic like SOS business models or macroeconomic trends, the vector space surrounding those topics is overwhelmingly populated by formal, academic, and translated texts.
Ah, I see. The mathematical gravity of the subject matter is pulling the AI toward a formal tone.
Precisely. The billions of tokens representing formal business writing carry massive statistical weight.
And your little prompt that says be conversational is just a drop in the ocean.
It's a tiny mathematical weight trying to counteract a black hole. Abstract instructions just don't provide the model with enough specific alternative vocabulary to override its default predictions.
It literally doesn't know how to be conversational about SOS because it hasn't seen enough statistically significant examples of humans doing that in its training data.
Exactly.
That makes total sense. It's like you can't just command a 60-year-old legal scholar to talk like a cool teenager.
Right. They literally lack the vocabulary to execute the command, even if they want to obey it.
So abstract prompting is dead. Wishes and vibes don't work.
Not for this, no.
The developer realizes they have to make culture computable. They have to build a system.
Right. They had to move away from what we call zero-shot prompting.
Which is where you just ask the AI to do the thinking, the translating, the formatting, and the tone matching all in one single step.
Exactly. Instead, they built a highly structured pipeline. They analyzed those top Chinese writers we talked about and codified their techniques into a massive 435-line style reference guide.
435 lines of pure instruction. That is intense.
It is.
And looking at the source material, they didn't just map out the broad strokes. They analyzed hook patterns, emotional pacing, this tension release alternation they call Zhang Qijiti.
It's like building a roller coaster for the reader's attention span.
Totally. But the most brilliant, actionable piece of this entire 435 line architecture was something the developer called the kill list.
The kill list is where the abstract finally becomes mathematical.
I love this concept.
Because an LLM struggles with a negative command, like, don't be formal. You have to give it a concrete constraint it cannot ignore.
I was looking at this list, and it's brilliant. They literally banned specific academic transition words and gave the AI exact replacements.
Give us an example.
So instead of letting the AI use the phrase to sum up, which is Zhongshang Sukshu.
Very formal.
Super formal. The AI was strictly instructed to replace it with Shu Dao Dikli, which translates more closely to at the end of the day or CC.
That tiny shift completely changes the relationship between the writer and the reader.
One is a professor closing a lecture. The other is a friend leaning across the table to give you the real takeaway.
It's so much more intimate.
They also banned the phrase. It is worth noting that Zide Zui Dishi.
Good. That phrase is terrible for engagement.
Right. Whenever the AI wanted to use that, it was forced to swap in then Nimi Mei Zui Dao, which means, but you might not have noticed.
Wow, that is so much more conversational.
Even list formats were killed. No more. Firstly, secondly, lastly.
What did they use instead?
Instead, the AI was taught to use The first one, more importantly, and my personal favorite. But the most ruthless part is...
But the most ruthless part is, that adds incredible flavor.
It really does.
And from a machine learning perspective, this works because explicit find X and replace with Y instructions give the model a concrete mathematical constraint.
It doesn't have to guess what flavor is, it just executes the swap.
Exactly. The developer noted that this kill list alone eliminated 80% of the translation ease in a single stroke.
80%?
Yeah.
But, you know, a kill list only patches the vocabulary. It doesn't build that inductive emotional spiral we were talking about.
Right. To teach the AI the actual architecture of the writing, the developer had to use highly specific before and after examples.
How does that work in a prompt?
Examples carry far more mathematical weight in a prompt than descriptions. Showing the same idea written in two different styles gives the model a clear map of the transformation you want.
Okay, so they provided the AI with a classic translated ease passage about software sales, which read something like, as AI technology popularizes, traditional SaaS subscription models are being replaced by consumption models billed by usage, facing fundamental challenges.
Again, very dry, a lot of passive voice.
So dry. Then they provided the native translated equivalent demonstrating the spiral structure.
And how did that sound?
It read, this company's business model, to put it bluntly, is almost a dead end.
Yeah.
The reason is simple. Before you sold SaaS, customers paid monthly. Whether they used it or not, you collected the money.
Yeah.
Now, customers are saying, I have an agent. I'll pay for what I use. If I don't use it, I don't pay.
Oh, that is so much better.
Right.
By seeing them side by side, the AI can map the exact changes. It sees that abstract descriptions are replaced by concrete, imagined dialogue.
It sees long clauses chopped into single-sentence paragraphs for dramatic emphasis.
Oh, exactly.
But here is the craziest part of this entire endeavor. They gave the AI the 435-line guide. They gave it the kill list. They gave it before and after examples.
Right.
And they still didn't trust it to get it right on the first try.
Because they knew the gravity of the training data is always pulling the AI back toward the academic mean.
It's relentless.
It is. So they implemented the final stage of the pipeline, the proofreader pass.
This is such an advanced way to use AI. Walk us through how a proofreader pass actually works.
So in a standard zero-shot interaction, you ask the AI to write something, and whatever it spits out is the final product.
Right. You just accept it or re-roll it manually.
Exactly. But in a pipeline architecture, generation is only step one. After the AI drafts the article using the 435-line guide, the system automatically triggers a secondary prompt.
Like a completely new persona.
Yes, a new agent whose sole job is to ruthlessly critique the first draft.
It's an AI grading its own homework against a strict rubric.
Exactly. The proofreader scans the generated text, hunting for any lingering translation ease that slipped past the first pass.
Wow.
It looks for formal verbs like zuo wei or jing xing to conduct and just rips them out.
That's amazing.
And more importantly, it is instructed to mentally read aloud the text to check the flow.
Read aloud.
Yeah, the guiding rule is simple. If a sentence sounds weird when spoken out loud, it reads weird when written on the page. Only after passing the secondary validation loop is the text actually finalized.
The sheer scale of effort here is just mind-blowing. It really proves that style is not a prompt. It's an entire pipeline.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the broader takeaway for anyone using these models is that teaching an AI to write in a culturally specific style is orders of magnitude harder than teaching it to write code.
Because code is binary. Tests either pass or they fail. The compiler doesn't care about your tone.
Exactly. But human writing exists on an infinite spectrum of nuance. The gap between technically readable and culturally native is vast.
And bridging it requires deep, intentional study of the target culture.
It really does.
And, you know, most of the time, those cultural writing patterns are completely invisible to us.
We don't even realize we're doing them.
The developer admitted they didn't even notice the translation ace at first because their own eyes were so trained by reading English documentation all day.
Right, they became numb to it.
You only start seeing the inductive spirals, the tension release pacing, and the emotional punchlines when you actively, deliberately study the culture's media landscape.
You cannot fix a cultural blind spot with a single prompt. It requires a system.
Which brings us right back to you, the listener. If you're using AI to draft a quick email to a colleague overseas, or trying to localize a marketing campaign for a new region, this case study is a massive wake-up call.
Absolutely.
Getting the grammar right is just the baseline. It is the absolute bare minimum for entry. If you want your message to actually persuade, if you want it to build trust, you have to hit the right cultural register.
Because if you don't map that cultural architecture, you are just speaking into the void in a very technically accurate way.
You're broadcasting on a frequency the audience inherently distrusts. You're the jazz musician reading the sheet music without feeling the swing.
Exactly.
But let's leave you with this final thought to mull over. The developer in our source material looked at something incredibly intimate.
Human resonant.
Right. Human resonance, authenticity, the comforting cadence of a smart friend talking over dinner. And they successfully reverse engineered that deeply human feeling into a 435-line checklist, a find and replace algorithm, and a mathematical probability matrix.
They made the soul of human writing computable.
They really did. So if an AI can perfectly mimic a culturally native, deeply emotional human voice just by strictly following tension release pacing rules and a kill list.
Makes you wonder.
It does. What does that say about our own human creativity? Is your unique, deeply personal writing style just a hidden algorithm waiting to be mapped? Are we all just running our own internal predictable 435-line scripts without even realizing it? Think about that the next time you sit down to write something straight from the heart.